VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. Our 30-minute program is designed for English learners. Today on the show, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher, and we close with an American story. But first,
Chris Patten was Britain's final governor of Hong Kong. In that job, he legislated several democratic reforms that were expected to last 50 years. In 1997, the island was returned to China, which had promised to respect its autonomy. Instead, Patten has watched Hong Kong's self-rule powers shrink under Chinese control. What the mainland government has done to Hong Kong is, in his words, the biggest assault on freedom and liberty in any city in the 21st century. Patten made the comment during an online policy discussion last week. What they are doing in Hong Kong is to destroy what was promised in Hong Kong, a high degree of autonomy, one country, two systems. The Canada-based MacDonald Laurier Institute and the London-based Hong Kong Watch organized the discussion about Hong Kong's future. The EU-based European Values Center for Security Policy and the multinational Inter-Parliamentary Alliance also took part. The Chinese Communist Party has decided to rule Hong Kong in the same way as the rest of China. It is restricting or removing the freedoms of Hong Kongers, Patten said. That will slow China's own economic development, Patten added. We know that 70% of direct investment that goes into China and investment that comes out goes through Hong Kong, he said. In the 90-minute discussion that included other speakers, Patten said the current 10 years may represent what's called peak China. It's true that China is the largest country in the world, and it's true that China is a huge market for us. But the truth of the matter is, China needs us just as much, and perhaps even more, than we need China. British exports to China have increased in real terms by just 3% since 1980, while China's exports to Britain have risen by 9%, he said. So who's helping whom? Patten said questioning Chinese actions in Hong Kong is not being anti-China. It is not anti-Chinese to say we should stand up for liberal democracy, he said. Standing up for liberal democracy means standing up for one another. Since 2003, Patten has served as Chancellor of Oxford University. He urged the international community to help provide a lifeline to those brave enough to resist the Chinese government and Hong Kong officials that support it. This should include providing more Hong Kong students with the chance to study at universities around the world, he said. I'm Susan Shand.
sales of used clothing are part of fast fashion, but the industry is breaking down because of COVID-19 restrictions. Fast fashion is a term for the manufacture and marketing of clothing that often looks like popular fashion creations. But fast fashion goods are mass-produced and sold at low prices. Fast fashion appeals to the many people who want to wear the latest styles from major designers but do not have enough money to buy them. The industry is worth about $35 billion a year. However, it depends on a complex process of used clothing sales. Clothing resale and recycling helps prevent the fashion industry's growing amount of waste from going directly to landfills. It can also help many people clear out old clothing and shoes from their homes to make room for next season's designs. But now the system is facing a crisis. Exporters are struggling, as are traders and buyers. Many buyers are from poorer nations and depend on a continuous supply of used clothes.
The signs are everywhere. From London to Los Angeles, many used clothing stores and clothing banks have been filling up with more clothing than could be sold. Mountains of clothes are building up in storage centers. Since the COVID-19 crisis began, clothing recyclers and exporters have had to cut prices as their supplies grew and health safety measures restricted movement and business. We are reaching the point where our warehouses are completely full, Antonio De Carvalho wrote to a client in June. De Carvalho is the head of a clothing recycling company in Stourbridge, England. The client had requested a price cut for clothing he collects. De Carvalho pays towns for clothing collected in his containers, then sells it to traders overseas. Since May, he says, he has had to cut the price for a ton of clothes from about $725 to about $515. He said that is making it hard for his company, Green World Recycling, to pay the costs of collecting and storing products. Buyers were also asking to increase the credit period before they had to pay from 15 days to 45 to 60 days, De Carvalho wrote. We are losing a huge amount of money, making a big loss for the operation.
De Carvalho's experience is shared across the industry, leading to expectations of a slow recovery, even if the COVID-19 pandemic ends. Recycling businesses are already taking steps in hopes of saving money. Reuters spoke to officials of 16 such companies in Britain, Germany, the Netherlands, and the United States. The officials reported that they are removing containers for clothing donations from streets and reducing the number of times these clothing banks are emptied. They are also considering dismissing some employees. At the same time, donations have increased as many people stuck at home are clearing out old clothing. This is unlike any other recession in a century, said Jackie King, She leads the Secondary Materials and Recycled Textiles Association, a U.S. trade group. I would anticipate there will be companies going out of business, she said.
Exports of used clothing have shrunk this year. In Britain, the weight of used clothing exported from March to July was around half what it was for the same period last year, official trade reports show. Exports improved in July, the latest month on record, as countries began to reopen, but were still down around 30%. In the United States, the value of exports from March to July fell 45% compared with the same period last year, government records show. Up to a third of clothes donated in the United States, the world's biggest exporter of used clothing, ends up for sale in markets in the developing world.
The results of the drop in sales can be seen in some African countries. Kenya imported 176,000 tons of secondhand clothing in 2018. On a recent day, business was slow in Gikomba, an open-air market in Nairobi, the country's capital. Gikomba is one of the biggest used clothes markets in East Africa. Traders have been hit with an already shrinking supply, made even smaller by COVID-linked bans on clothing imports. And COVID restrictions and worries have meant more people are staying at home. Before coronavirus came in, I would manage to sell at least 50 trousers a day, said trader Nicolas Mutizia. But now, he added, even selling one a day has become difficult. The ban on textile imports ended in August.
Major trade in used clothing from Europe and the United States rose in the 1990s as demand for Western fashion increased in Africa and Eastern Europe. Such demand has provided badly needed help for a growing fashion market. Clothing production has increased 100% over the past 15 years, reports the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, a British aid group. In March of 2019, the United Nations Environment Program reported the fashion industry was the second biggest industrial user of water. It also noted that fashion businesses are responsible for up to 10% of carbon releases worldwide, more than international flights and shipping combined. And old clothing represents a massive and growing amount of waste that ends up in landfills. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
This week, we received the same question from a fan in Italy and another in Brazil, but we are sure the question is shared by even more English learners, so let's answer it. Could I know the different meanings of take and get? Thanks, from Bruna in Italy. Hello, good evening. I would like to know the difference between the words get and take, and how can I use them in a sentence? From Arthur in Brazil. Dear Bruna and Arthur, thanks for writing to us. The main difference between these two words concerns who is performing the action.
Get and take are verbs. Get means to gain possession of something. Another word for get is obtain. The word receive can also sometimes substitute for get.
Ellen got the new bike on her birthday.
Take means to move or carry something from one place to another.
Ellen takes her new bike everywhere she needs to go.
Take often suggests to gain possession of something by force, illegally or unfairly. Then it is similar to verbs like seize and capture.
The military took control of the country after the soldiers rebelled. Take is also often used more idiomatically as well in providing directions to a place. For example,
Jack's store is on Robbins Road. Take 4th Street for a mile and you will see it.
In that case, take means use or follow. Confusingly, take can also be used similar to the verb give, like in this sentence.
Michael takes care of Jennifer's dog.
In that case, the speaker means Michael is the person responsible for meeting the dog's needs. He is the caregiver to the dog. Finally, take is often used in connection with expressions of time. For example,
Ellie takes 30 minutes to get ready for work.
That sentence has the exact same meaning as Ellie spends 30 minutes to get ready for work.
Get also is common to idiomatic expressions. It often substitutes for the verbs understand and know. Listen to this sentence.
I get that we have to learn math, but I do not like it.
Sometimes that usage clearly suggests a speaker's impatience or frustration.
I get it, Mom. I have to clean my room today.
Finally, get is a common substitute for verbs feel, become, or start, among others. Here are some examples.
I'm going to leave for lunch when I get hungry. She gets sad on rainy days. He left the show when the music got loud.
There are many more idiomatic uses of get and take. Look for them whenever you get to practice your English. We are sure to take up the subject again. And that's Ask a Teacher for this week. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Gregory Stockel.
Our story today is called A Municipal Report. It was written by O. Henry and first published in 1904. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
It was raining as I got off the train in Nashville, Tennessee. A slow, gray rain. I was tired, so I went straight to my hotel. A big, heavy man was walking up and down in the hotel lobby. Something about the way he moved made me think of a hungry dog looking for a bone. He had a big, fat, red face and a sleepy expression in his eyes. He introduced himself as Wentworth Caswell, Major Wentworth Caswell, from a fine southern family. Caswell pulled me into the hotel's barroom and yelled for a waiter. We ordered drinks. While we drank, he talked continually about himself, his family, his wife, and her family. He said his wife was rich. He showed me a handful of silver coins that he pulled from his coat pocket. By this time, I had decided that I wanted no more of him. I said goodnight. I went up to my room and looked out the window. It was 10 o'clock, but the town was silent. A nice, quiet place, I said to myself as I got ready for bed. Just an ordinary, sleepy, southern town. I was born in the South myself, but I live in New York now. I write for a large magazine. My boss had asked me to go to Nashville. The magazine had received some stories and poems from a writer in Nashville named Azalea Adair. The editor liked her work very much. The publisher asked me to get her to sign an agreement to write only for his magazine. I left the hotel at 9 o'clock the next morning to find Miss Adair. It was still raining. As soon as I stepped outside, I met Uncle Caesar. He was a big old black man with fuzzy gray hair. Uncle Caesar was wearing the strangest coat I had ever seen. It must have been a military officer's coat. It was very long, and when it was new, it had been gray. But now, rain, sun, and age had made it a rainbow of colors. Only one of the buttons was left. It was yellow, and as big as a 50-cent coin. Uncle Caesar stood near a horse and carriage. He opened the carriage door and said softly, "Step right in, sir. I'll take you anywhere in the city. I want to go to 861 Jasmine Street," I said, and I started to climb into the carriage. But the old man stopped me. "Why do you want to go there, sir?" "What business is it of yours?" I said angrily. Uncle Caesar relaxed and smiled. "Nothing, sir, but it's a lonely part of town. Just step in and I'll take you there right away." 861 Jasmine Street had been a fine house once, but now it was old and dying. I got out of the carriage. "That will be $2, sir," Uncle Caesar said. I gave him two $1 bills. As I handed them to him, I noticed that one had been torn in half and fixed with a piece of blue paper. Also, the upper right-hand corner was missing. Azalea Adair herself opened the door when I knocked. She was about 50 years old. Her white hair was pulled back from her small, tired face. She wore a pale yellow dress. It was old, but very clean. Azalea Adair led me into her living room. A damaged table, 3 chairs, and an old red sofa were in the center of the floor. Azalea Adair and I sat down at the table and began to talk. I told her about the magazine's offer. She told me about herself. She was from an old southern family. Her father had been a judge. Azalea Adair told me she had never traveled or even attended school. Her parents taught her at home with private teachers. We finished our meeting. I promised to return with the agreement the next day and rose to leave. At that moment, someone knocked at the back door. Azalea Adair whispered a soft apology and went to answer the caller. She came back a minute later with bright eyes and pink cheeks. She looked 10 years younger. "You must have a cup of tea before you go," she said. She shook a little bell on the table, and a small black girl about 12 years old ran into the room. Azalea Adair opened a tiny old purse and took out a $1 bill. It had been fixed with a piece of blue paper, and the upper right-hand corner was missing. It was the dollar I had given to Uncle Caesar. "Go to Mr. Baker's store, Impey," she said, "and get me 25 cents worth of tea and 10 cents worth of sugar cakes, and please hurry." The child ran out of the room. We heard the back door close. Then the girl screamed, her cry mixed with a man's angry voice. Azalea Adair stood up. Her face showed no emotion as she left the room. I heard the man's rough voice and her gentle one. Then a door slammed, and she came back into the room.
I am sorry, but I won't be able to offer you any tea after all, she said. It seems that Mr. Baker has no more tea. Perhaps he will find some for our visit tomorrow.
We said goodbye. I went back to my hotel. Just before dinner, Major Wentworth Caswell found me. It was impossible to avoid him. He insisted on buying me a drink and pulled two $1 bills from his pocket. Again, I saw a torn dollar fixed with blue paper with a corner missing. It was the one I gave Uncle Caesar. How strange, I thought. I wondered how Caswell got it. Uncle Caesar was waiting outside the hotel the next afternoon. He took me to Miss Adair's house and agreed to wait there until we had finished our business. Azalea Adair did not look well. I explained the agreement to her. She signed it. Then, as she started to rise from the table, Azalea Adair fainted and fell to the floor. I picked her up and carried her to the old red sofa. I ran to the door and yelled to Uncle Caesar for help. He ran down the street. 5 minutes later, he was back with a doctor. The doctor examined Miss Adair and turned to the old black driver. Uncle Caesar, he said, run to my house and ask my wife for some milk and some eggs. Hurry. Then the doctor turned to me. She does not get enough to eat, he said. She has many friends who want to help her, but she is proud. Mrs. Caswell will accept help only from that old black man. He was once her family's slave. Mrs. Caswell, I said in surprise, I thought she was Azalea Adair. She was, the doctor answered, until she married Wentworth Caswell 20 years ago. But he's a hopeless drunk. He takes even the small amount of money that Uncle Caesar gives her. After the doctor left, I heard Caesar's voice in the other room. Did he take all the money I gave you yesterday, Miss Azalea? Yes, Caesar, I heard her answer softly. He took both dollars. I went into the room and gave Azalea Adair $50. I told her it was from the magazine. Then Uncle Caesar drove me back to the hotel. A few hours later, I went out for a walk before dinner. A crowd of people was talking excitedly in front of a store. I pushed my way into the store. Major Caswell was lying on the floor. He was dead. Someone had found his body on the street. He had been killed in a fight. In fact, his hands were still closed into tight fists. But as I stood near his body, Caswell's right hand opened. Something fell from it and rolled near my feet. I put my foot on it, then picked it up and put it in my pocket. People said they believed a thief had killed him. They said Caswell had been showing everyone that he had $50, but when he was found, he had no money on him. I left Nashville the next morning. As the train crossed a river, I took out of my pocket the object that had dropped from Caswell's dead hand. I threw it into the river below. It was a button, a yellow button, the one from Uncle Caesar's coat.
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow with another Learning English program on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.